They're the ones, more than anybody else, who are likely to be desensitized to the notion of this Aveda. Therefore, B'davka, we want them to be the ones who are involved in executing him in order to make it repulsive in their own mind to ever do that anybody should ever do such a thing. They shouldn't be desensitized. They should resensitize themselves to it by killing the guy. Anyway, but yeah, everybody else has to be involved because that's what the Torah says. Everybody else is there, shouldn't just be passive bystanders. If necessary, then they get involved as well. So the Gemara says, Tana, we learn in a Braisa. We said in the Mishnah that the height of the thing, the height of the platform or the cliff or what have you, was twice the height of a person. But Kaima Shaloi, plus you have the person's own height, because he was thrown off from a standing position, not sitting. Harekan Shalosh, so altogether you have three body heights, that is, his head lands on the ground from three body heights up. Okay, the question is, when we begin in Kola Hai, you're asking why so little. The Gemara starts by asking, why do you need so much? On the face of it, an even smaller amount is enough to kill a person. Uraminu, we have a contradiction. We learn in Bava Kama, Ma bur shokude lahamas asara tfachim, just as a bur needs to be only 10 tfachim deep. It's the same thing, it's falling from a height. That a bur only needs to be 10 tfachim deep to kill an animal. Akol kude lahamas asara tfachim, the same thing, any other kind of thing, even if it's not a burr, it's some other kind of hazard or whatever, that's 10 tfachim, then also you're chayav for it. So therefore, 10 tfachim is enough. Now, Tosfa says,
how can you be killed with 10 tfachim?
Yeah, so Tosfa says, you could ask the question, is there a difference? Maybe an animal can be killed by a fall of 10 tfachim, maybe a person not. Tosfa says, the fact that we have to be memayat over there, shur v'loy odom, that you're only chayav if a shur falls into your burr and dies, not if a person falls into your burr and dies, implies that 10 tfachim is enough to kill a person as well.
You're supposed to see it.
Yeah, okay, but nevertheless, the fact is that 10 tfachim would be enough to kill a person. Amr Rav Nachman, Amr Rav Baravua. So Rav Nachman answers in the name of Rav Baravua because Omar Kro, because the Pasuk says, which we learned earlier on the Amud, Ve'ahaf L'Rech HaKamah, so Drow Le'Misa Yafa, choose for him the best possible death, the easiest possible death. In other words, therefore, if you do only 10 tfachim, yes, it might kill him, but it might not, and then he's going to suffer more. So like this, you do it from a higher height in order that there's a greater chance that he'll die from the fall. And the question is, Yehachi Lig Behekfei, then you have your question in that case, why don't we make it even higher than that? And the answer is Mishum de Minval. Because on the other hand, then you also don't have Yahweh. Because then he gets Nisbazet. Then he has the body breaks apart, the stomach slips open, etc. So like this, when you do it, we don't want that. That would also be a bazillion to him. That would also not be Yahweh. So therefore we split the difference, and therefore we make it from two body heights plus his own for a total of three. That's enough that most likely it'll kill him in the fall, but on the other hand that his body will stay intact. We said in the Mishnah, Echad min ha'edim doichoi, we said in the Mishnah, one of the edim pushes him from his hips, and he falls down. So, Tana Rabbanan, minayin shebedechiyah, how do we know b'chlal, the concept? I mean, skila on the face of it means pelting him with rock. Where do we know that it includes the idea of throwing him off? Tamad loimer, so we have there's a pasuk by Matan, before Matan Torah. The Ebishter tells Moshe, Lo siga boyod, nobody should touch Har Sinai during the Shloshes Magbala, during the time when Har Sinai is off limits before and during Matan Torah. Anybody who touches it, kisoko yisokel or yore yore. He will be stoned or thrown, he will be thrown. So we're going to darshan in those words, soko yisokel and yore yore, to explain that teaches us that.
Oh,
and we'll see. Wait. So minayin shvedechia, how do we know that it involves throwing them off? Tamad lima yore. Therefore, the pasuk says throwing yore. Minayin shvedechia, tamad lima sokol, because the pasuk also says sokol, a stone. Tosfos asks the question. In that case, who says maybe we should do the stoning first and then the throwing off? Tosfos says we have a different pasuk that says skaltam ba'avon v'mesu, implying the skila comes right before the death. So it has to be the last thing. The actual proximate cause of death. You can't have the first you stone him and then you throw him off, because then. Different other Mephoshim give different other explanations as well. I think the Yad Ramah says, practically speaking, what are you going to have after you pelted the guy with stones and he's bleeding all over the place? You're going to have him be able to stand up by the cliff over there to throw him down? It's not going to work. So therefore, okay. How do we know that it's both? How do we know that both stoning and pushing off are involved? Tamad lema soko yisoko or yora yora. Therefore, the Pasuk mentions both, stoning and then throwing down. Now, you're asking, what about Hoi? So how do we know then that suppose the person dies just from the throwing off, then already we're Yoitse. He's Yoitse, he doesn't now need stones thrown on him. We, Beis Din, don't have to do any more, and he himself is already Yoitse, he has his kapara. How do we know that? That is why the Pasuk says, oi, not to say that you do one or you do whichever one you choose. It means you do the yora yora. And that may be all you have to do. Or it may be that all that's necessary is yora yora. So therefore it goes like that. You do yora yora, you throw him off. And if it's still necessary, if he's not dead yet, then sokol yisokol. Fine. How do we know the same rule applies in all future generations? We know that by Harsinai, but as Tosus points out, Harsinai is a Matan Torah, is a one-time unique event. How do we know it applies to all of the cases of Skila? Yeah. Amavayma sokol yisokol. Therefore, the Pasuk uses the expression sokol yisokol, which actually points out the word yisokol is lashon osid. It's future tense. If it just meant that it's a one-time thing, sokol, sokal, yora, yora, whatever. Sokol, no, chisokol would be the same thing, but whatever. The fact that it puts it in future tense, yisokol, he will be stoned, and yiyora, he will be thrown down, shows us that it meant ledurus as well. So that's what it is. So those are the two basic stages of it. Yeah. Okay. We said in the Mishnah of Im Lav that if he didn't die from the fall, Eid Hasheni Notel to Evan, we said them, thank you. We said the second Eid takes a stone. So the question is, what do you mean Notel? What do you mean he takes it, implying only one Eid picks it up? Valtanya, but we learn in a brayse of Shimon Alonzoimer. Evan hoita sham masu shnei bnei adam. There was a stone there, the weight that of heavy enough that it would take two people to lift it. Noitel v'nois nalibo. He picks it up and then throws it on his heart. Yeah, imes b'yota. And if the guy dies from that, then we yotze. So we see lachora two people have to pick it up. One is not enough. So the answer is, the Gemara says, "V'litai meich nu according to your own svara, tikshilach he gofa." You can ask a contradiction in the braisa itself. The braisa itself seems to be inconsistent. Masu shnei bnei adam. First, you're saying that it's a weight that it takes two people to lift up, but then you're saying in the singular, nois love and nois nalibe, he picks it up and throws it on the guy's chest. So what is it? Is it something that takes two people to lift up, or is it something that takes one? Ella, no. What it means is the middle of adichad, right? It means that when it comes to lifting it up, the two adim together lift it up. The shadi ihu, but then when it comes to dropping it, only one of them drops it. In other words, what happens is the two of them lift it up. The way that Rambam explains it in more detail. The both of them lift it up together. One of them removes his hand, and automatically, therefore, it's too heavy for the other one, and therefore he drops it. And the reason why is who only one throws it, because you want it to come with the maximum possible strength. Two people together are not going to be able to coordinate to the split second to be able to throw at the same time. So therefore, if you have the both of them doing it, it's not going to be with the all possible impact. And it's hard to let her kill him, Pastor.
The
idea is, I guess, that first he's likely to die from the fall because his head hits the ground. If that doesn't work, then it's probably because you have the same problem as we were talking about before. If you were to throw the rock on his head, more likely his head would splatter into bits, and you don't want that. If anything, you throw it on his torso, on his chest, his body is more likely to stay intact. Anyway, the point is, you want it to be thrown with as much strength as possible, so therefore you want only one of them to be dropping it. That way he can that way there's no coordination there. Okay. We
but
said
it's such a big stone, how can you put it over the cliff?
They lift it up to the edge of the cliff. I don't know, they lift it up together.
It's a big stone.
The big stone. It's big enough that the two of them can lift it up together, and then one of them lets go and the other one immediately drops.
They cannot completely lift it over the cliff.
Apparently they could. They probably had some way. I don't know. Maybe the cliff will have an overhang a little bit. I don't know. All right.
Why they shouldn't push it? Why they have to lift it up?
Probably for the same reason, so it goes with maximum force. Again, the idea is you barely miss the upper. You want it to be as easy a death for the guy as possible. The greater the impact, the more likely it is that he'll die from that.
But they shouldn't die at the same time.
It's one person who's being executed to aid him. No, we're saying practically speaking,
he can't.
Yeah.
And he's still,
In all likelihood, the other people, they probably have people holding on to that to make sure they don't go over with it. Then we said that if not, if he still didn't die from that, then everybody else stones him. So the question is, the Gemara says, what do you mean? Nobody ever needed that second. Nobody ever needed that second thing. Everybody always died either from the fall or from the big rock. Gemara says, okay, so me coming to Ovid, the Mishnah is not saying it ever actually happened. The imitzrich coming, the Mishnah is saying, should it be necessary? Here is the procedure, not to say they ever actually had to do it. Omamar, we learned in the Braisa before, Evan Hoysachol, we said there was a big stone over there that the two Adam would pick up, etc. Now, saying there's a big stone there implies that they always use the same stone. The problem with that is, Vahatanya, but we learned in the Braisa, Echad Evan Shin, Achas Evan Shin Niskaba, whether the guy was killed by Skilla, so therefore the stone that he was stoned with, the Achas Eit Shin Nitla, or the piece of wood that he's hanged on, which we'll see in the next two Mishnayos, we'll see the detail of how hanging was done for those who had to have it. The Echad Sayef Shin Nechnakbay, or the sword with which he was killed, the Echad Suda Shin Nechnakbay, or the scarf that he was strangled with, Kulam Nikbar and Imay, all those things are buried together with him. So what do you mean? The same stone was always used. Each time a person was given skilla, that stone would have to be buried with him, and they need another one next time. The answer is, that's what I mean. No, that's it's not needed to say. What it means to say is, the mesachnu, my sachrin, yichilofayu. In meaning, the loitzricha is the Gemara's standard way of saying it. It wasn't needed to say what you thought, that it means they used the same stone always. It means they needed, that means it was needed, the braisa means to say that each time they would prepare and bring another stone. Whenever there was skilla needed to be done, they'd prepare another stone for the purpose. And then the previous one would be buried. Why, by the way, the stone is buried with him and all the other sayif and so forth, Mephoshim say the reason is because you don't want that it should be a gnai for the person. People shouldn't be saying forever after, hey, look at that stone. That's the stone that Pliny was killed with.
So why buried?
Where else should it be buried?
Where else?
Yeah.
Where should it be buried?
It's
not
but,
like a potato.
Okay, so the question is, what do you mean nikbarin imo? What do you mean buried with him? But Tanya ain't nikbarin imo, but we learn in another bright that they're not buried with him. Amar Papa, my ima b'tri sase. So the Papa says, you're right. You don't mean literally with him in the same cave. You just mean within four amas of him. They're buried nearby.
Yeah,
nearby. By the way, I mean, you notice the Mishnah had left out the what's used for strafer, and the reason is strafer is hot lead. There's nothing to bury anymore. It went down his throat.
So the rest of which was not
better than his arm.
The rest of the lead? No, but actually, the rest of the lead that wasn't used doesn't need to be done with it. Okay. Omar Shmuel. Shmuel says a din as follows. Nikta yada edim potter. So, okay, we said in the Mishnah, we said that the edim are supposed to be the ones, one of the edim is supposed to be pushing them off, another one of the two edim together pick up the rock, etc., etc. What happens, Shmuel says, if the hands of the edim got chopped off? Whatever it was, they were in an accident. They got caught in a machine or whatever, and then potter. Then the guy is potter from Misa. My timer, why is that? To be in a yada edim tia boy barishayna, because you need to follow what the pasuk says, the hand of the edim should be on him first. Veleka, now you can't have it because they don't have hands. So the question is, ela me'asa edim gidmin de me'ikara. So what are you going to say? By the same logic, if edim l'chachila are amputees, if they have no hands, hachinami dipsili, are you going to tell me that such people are apostle as edim? We never find such a thing. We never find such a thing. And in that case, Rashi says also the question is, why is Shmuel saying nikta ayada edim, which implies that they had edim at the time when they saw the edus, or at the time they testified and based them. They lost them afterwards, before the guy is executed. If you're going to say, if the meaning is they have to have hands on chila, then the expression is edim gidmin, psulin, or people who are amputated are possible of edim. Shmuel doesn't say that, which implies that he's making that distinction between when the hands got amputated. Why is that? The answer is shiny hustle. It's different in that case. Because when the pasuk says yada edim, it means the hands that they already had at the time when they saw, or at the time they testified in basin. That's machlokas among the mechoshim, which it is, which is the key thing. But whatever, the hand that they had at the time is the same hand that they have to be able to use to execute the guy. So therefore, if they had hands at that time, and now they don't anymore.
All the four hands have to be there?
Yeah, but, well, there, no. Well, okay, there is actually, before we should discuss the question, what if only one of the agents lost a hand? What does it have to be that both of them are equally involved? Yeah, okay, the point is, whatever, however exactly you understand it. The point is, if they were missing their hands up to begin with, fine, they're not possible agent. In that case, fine, they had no hands to begin with. There's no yada agent in the first place. That's not a problem. But by saying yadir edim, the pasuk is implying the same hand that they had at the time when they were edim, they have to have now to carry out the judgment, and now we can't do that because they're missing those.
But they didn't have hands when they were edim, it would be pasuk?
No, we're saying as long as by the time they saw the edim, so by the time they came and testified and based it, again, it's an argument among the portion, which one? But if at the time already they were missing their hands, no problem. We can go ahead with the judgment. We can go ahead with the execution. Okay, they won't be able to be the ones who push him or who throw the rock or whatever. Fine, we'll get other people to do it. But if they themselves had hands and would have been capable and lost their hands after the Eidos, that's when Shmuel was saying the guy's busted. Interesting thing, by the way, you know, we learned yesterday, two days ago, the whole story of Shimon ben Shattach's son who was falsely accused and ended up being executed by Beis Din. But Sameach points out on that basis, based on our Gemara over here, couldn't the Edim have volunteered to have their hands chopped off, and then the guy would be potter that way? Because like this, they're saying we can't get out of it because Kivin Shehigat Shuvenichos are magid. So the Sameach says, as a matter of fact, we see from that a person is not obligated to go to do that, to lose a limb in order to save another person's life.
Really?
Yeah. Now, there is a lot of discussion about that among Achroinim. First of all, losing a limb might taka be a matter of sakonis nefashis. So taka, it's true, chayefa koidmin, there is that point. But there's other considerations as well. Some of the other Achroinim say it's not really approved, because, for example, the Yerushalmi says they accused him of killing somebody. In that case, the punishment is herek. The Edom don't do herek anyway, the Edom do skila. So therefore, it's not relevant. They were false Edom, but then nobody actually came to prove them as Zomimim. They themselves retracted and said that we spoke falsely, but that doesn't matter. It doesn't work. Yeah. Okay. The Gemara says, Maisi, I have a contradiction. A Mishnah says in Matthas, Kol Mokum Shiyidu Shnayim. Suppose a person has been tried and convicted in Beis Din, and then let's say he escapes. So now, if later on two Edim come, and in any Beis Din, the Yomu, and they say, we say we give Eidos about Pliny that he was already tried and sentenced in such and such a Beis Din, or Pliny or Pliny Eidos, and that Pliny and Pliny are his Eidim, Harezi Yehorek. That's evidence enough to give him to execute for the second Beis Din. In other words, even though they didn't hear the actual case, they didn't hear the actual testimony and whatever, but because Eidos is being given in their presence that this guy was convicted in such and such a Beis Din.
It has to be the same Eidim.
Well, that's according to Shmuel. It should have to be the same Eidim. Yadar Eidim Tiyah Bar Rishona. The answer is, Tirgum Shmuel, Behein Hein Eidos. You're right. Shmuel would have to explain that Mishnah is talking about that the very same Edim themselves come to another Beis Din, and the same ones who testified in the first Beis Din are the ones who are coming and testifying in another Beis Din that we get. What about the expression of Pliny or Pliny Edim? Okay, the Mepharshim should say that's no big deal. They mean we, Pliny and Pliny, are his Edim. Okay. Pliny or Pliny Edim sounds like you're saying, two other people.
Right.
It sounds like you're talking in third person, but it could mean that we ourselves are Pliny and Pliny who were his Edim. Okay. Incidentally, by the way, the Gemara there in Marcus mentions an exception to that. If the guy was sentenced by a Beis Din in Chutz La'aretz, and now the new Edom are coming to a Beis Din in Eretz Yisrael, they do actually have to retry him, because maybe the Chutz of Eretz Yisrael will help them find a new ground to exonerate him. Okay. Yeah. All right. So that Mishnah is no contradiction, Shmuel. Fine. Okay, but we have to ask a more general question. Umipa inin kroka dechtit. Are you telling me that when the Torah says a certain mitzvah that you have to do things exactly as it says in the pasuk, and if a detail that can't be done as said in the pasuk, then you don't do it at all? Like in this case, we're saying yada edim, and if the edim have no hands, then you're saying part of the guy. Do we really say that? V'hatanya, but we learn in a brisa when the pasuk says mois yumas hamaker retzeachu, when the pasuk says that one a person who killed another person shall be killed, he is a retzeach. What is that? What is the expression "mois yumas" come to teach us? It means "ainly el b'misak suvaloi." If you only knew, if you didn't have the words "mois yumas," you would think he can only be killed with the appropriate misa, namely sayif, a murderer gets sayif, as we'll learn in the hereg, as we'll learn in the next parak. How do we know, though, that if for whatever reason you're not able to kill him with the appropriate misa that's said about him, how do we know that you would be able to kill him with any other way that you could potentially kill him? And it's interesting, by the way, the Rambam understands it to mean more generally that with a reseach, anyway, if you can't do any of you can't do hereg and you can't do any of the dalad misses, the guy's running away or whatever, shoot him with an arrow. On the other hand, when it comes to the other chayv misses, the Rambam's understanding is they can execute him if need be using one of the other misses, using one of the other three misses based in if need be, but not to just something out completely out of left field like an arrow or whatever. That's only a reseach. Anyway. Therefore, the pasuk says that mois yumas, implying it's an infinitive, implying no matter what, should be killed. Well, that's because the reseach is a very serious thing. Well, we're going to see in a second. So the question is, therefore, so you see, even though the Torah explicitly says that a reseach is supposed to get hereg, as we'll learn in the next parak, a little bit of it, nevertheless, we don't require that it be carried out exactly as it says. If for whatever reason you can't kill him that way, then you're able to kill him some other way. So in that case, we don't need kroch kedichtiv. We learn that from Mois Yumas, we just said.
From
these two words.
How would we say it otherwise?
Otherwise, the pasuk would just say mois yumas hamaseh, or whatever. Mois yumas isn't like an infinitive. It implies no matter what, he has to be killed. So the answer is shiny hot. Damakrom mois yumas. Well, that's exactly it. Because the pasuk says they mois yumas, therefore we have a special reason there to say that it's true over there. Okay, so the question is the ligma mine. Why don't we use it then as a binyan av and learn from it for all other chayv and mitzvah things? The answer is Mishum Dahab Ritseach, the Goel Adam, Shneksum Abon Kachon. Because you have the case of the Ritseach, and you also have the case of a Goel Adam, where the Torah teaches us the same concept, that he's able to use any kind of Misa, and therefore they are Shneksum Abon Kachon, therefore you have two Psukim that teach us the same din, and as we know throughout Shas, the whole Shneksum Abon Kachon, Ein Malam Din. Whenever you have two Psukim from which where the same din is stated by each one of them, it means only by them. It means that we can't learn from them for any place else. Because if the Torah wanted us to learn from one of them for every place else, it would have said it only by one of them. Like this one, it says it by two. It means that's only those two. So what are they? Retzeach hodam moram. The retzeach, we said, we have the word mois yumas, which teaches us that the retzeach can be killed with whatever means necessary. Goel Adam Maihi, what is the deal by the Goel Adam? Where do we see that? Titania, we learn in a Braise. So when the Pasuk says, Goel Adam Yomis Eser Ritzeach, when the Pasuk says the Goel Adam should kill the Ritzeach, that means mitzvah the Goel Adam. It means it's a mitzvah for the Goel Adam to kill him. We'll see, well, when we learn in Makkos in a few months, Bez Hashem, we'll see there's a machlokas about that. But here we're going according to that opinion. Uminayin Sheim Ein Lo Goel, and furthermore, how do we know that if the person who was killed has no goyel.
Yeah,
he has
like
the halacha, if I remember correctly, is that the goyel adam is reshut. He can kill him, but he's not obligated to. Yeah. Uminayin shim ein lo goyel. How do we know, furthermore, that if the dead person does not have a goyel, he doesn't have any close relative to avenge him. So based in mamidin lo goyel. How do we know that based in arranges that based in appoints somebody as a goyel adam? Right. Yes. Yeah. Therefore, the pasuk says, when he meets up with him, meaning no matter what. So therefore, again, now the goyel adam, whether it's an actual blood relation or whether it's a court-appointed one, is not going to be doing one of the dalad misses based in. He's not going to take the guy to a cliff and throw him off. He's going to be killing him with whatever he can, with an arrow or what have you. So therefore, we see that the Torah is telling us this is the same concept that applies to a ritzeach. Rashi, by the way, says over here we're talking about a ritzeach who's a shogeg.
How can he be
a reseach b'shogeg? What do you mean, how can he be a reseach b'shogeg? All the cases that you have in
Makkah.
No, the meaning of he killed somebody b'shogeg. The classic cases, for example, he's chopping wood and the axe handle flies off. So he's running to Golos, but if the Goel Adam finds him outside the Ur Mitzvah, then he's entitled to kill him. And according to the Gemara, we're saying over here it's a mitzvah for him to kill him. The Ramban asks a number of questions on Rashi, one of them being that in that case, our Gemara is not going according to the halacha, because the halacha is taka that with a retzeach b'shogeg, the halacha is that it is only reshus for him to kill him. It's not obligated. So why would the Gemara be using that opinion, which is not a liberty hilchos anyway? And also, the pasuk that we're referring to is talking about a retzeach b'mezid. So the Ramban says that's actually what we're talking about. We're talking about a retzeach b'mezid, where the Goel Adam is going after him, and therefore that's what we're saying mitzvah nefesh. That's what we're saying that he can do it. However,
so he feels the same way.
Be that as it may, the point is we have Beretzeach and we have Goel Adam. We have these two cases where the Torah spells out that you're able to kill him in whatever way possible. Therefore, that implies by all the other mitzvahs, they say, no, you need to do exactly as it says. But in you have to have the pasuk done exactly as it says, and that brings us back to Shmuel's din, that if the Edom have lost their hand, that if the Edom have had their hands amputated, then that's it, the guy's pasuk, because we don't have Kroka Dichtiv.
How do you know the person that will say it when Maisie? There's no Hashra on Edom at this point. It's just a matter that if he doesn't run to the Ir Mikrat, then the goal of them is going to kill him.
Well, but there's also, for example, I mean, you can have, when we get to this in Makkos, Hashem, we'll learn. No, but there's also, for example, first of all, you can have cases, we'll learn later on in Arma Sefta, where we know the guys are at Seach, but we didn't have enough evidence to actually convict him and execute him with Hereg. For example, there may not have been proper Hasra or whatever, and even so, we do Kodesh and Lotzul Kippah, as we'll see later on. But you also have, even among Shogig itself, really, you have different levels of Shogig. You know, you have, we'll learn in Makkos, you have the classic case of Shogig, the case where the guy runs Seir Mikvah, but then you have a Shogig which is close to an Oinus, where therefore the guy is completely potter. He doesn't have to go to the Ir Mikvah, and the Goel Adam can't go after him. Not forced to, but Shogig Korov La'onis would be an example, let's say, for one of the examples you have in the Mishnayos over there, let's say a person is climbing up a ladder and then and then falls off the ladder and then lands on somebody and kills him. That's considered, it's an onus, it's a freak accident. There's no way that he could have prevented it, basically. The Shogig, the kind where you have to go to the Ir Mikvah, is the kind where there was a little bit of carelessness on his part. He's going down a ladder, for example, he should be more careful because of gravity. He's swinging his axe, he should make sure that the axe head is more firmly attached to the thing, whatever. That's classic shogig. And then you have shogig korov l'mezid. You have the kind where a person who was shogig, he didn't mean to kill somebody, but he was korov l'mezid. The Gemara gives an example of there. Let's say, for example, a person takes a person throws a rock into a crowd of people and kills somebody. And that's shogig korov. Then he also doesn't go to the Ir Mikvah, but the Goel Adam can go after him. So he better watch his back all the time. Yeah.
There's no Adim, there's no Asra. He wouldn't have been killed. How's the Goel Adam have the right to kill him?
The Torah gives him that right.
He did
throw it. It's a subjective thing. I
mean, okay, but we know that he threw it. We knew that he threw it. We didn't have a throw, whatever. But yeah. All right. Oh, well, so there's three levels of shogig. There's shogig korov l'mezid, there's shogig, and there's shogig korov l'onus. Yeah. We'll learn about it.
Our mitzvah's not going
to
help him.
That's what I'm saying. Our mitzvah doesn't help him. He's going to have to watch his back for the rest of his life because the Goel Adam can get after him. Come after him, yeah.
I can still go to our mitzvah.
No, it's not going to help him. He goes go to the mitzvah. Doesn't going to help him. The Goel Adam can still, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. So he better invest in a Kevlar vest or something. Okay. Yeah. Are you telling me that there's even a Hava Minah we shouldn't have to follow exactly what the Pasuk says? In other words, that part of the question is, some of the Mepharshim explain, why does Shmuel even have to tell us his din? We know the concept, as we're going to see from the Mishnah, so therefore we could automatically deduce it without Shmuel telling us. Namely, Ratnan, we learn later on in our Masechta, and in the 8th Perek, when we're going to talk all about the Ben Sora Ramora of last week's Parasha, and the Mishnah says, "Hoya echad mehem gidim." If one of the parents of this Ben Sura Remora was missing a hand, or ilim, or is mute, or chiger, or lame, or stuma, or blind, or cheresh, or deaf, ain't a nasa Ben Sura Remora, then the child cannot become a Ben Sura Remora. Shenema, because the Pasuk says the Sotsuboi, the Pasuk says they grab a hold of him, the parents, implying Vele Gidmin, so neither of them is missing a hand, they're both able to grab a hold. Vahitziuoi, so they bring him out to Beis Din, implying Vele Chigrin, neither of them are lame. Vahomru, they speak to the Beis Din, implying Vele Ilmin, they're not mute. Bneinu Zer, they say this son of ours, implying Vele Sumin, they're not blind, they're able to point to him and show him and display him. And Enenu Shemea B'Kelenu, they say to the Beis Din, he doesn't listen to our voice, implying V'lai Chershin, so they can't be deaf, because if they're deaf, they don't know whether he's listening or not. So, my timer, now why should all that be? Lav Mishum Deva'in and Kroka Dechtiv, L'chura, because we need Kroka Dechtiv, so in that case, then what is Shmuel's Chiddush? The answer is, look, no, it's different, because Shiny Hossam is different in that case, to call it Kro Yaseirable, because that entire posit is unnecessary for the Pshat. Obviously, if he has to be brought to Beis Din, then his parents are going to bring him to Beis Din and make a declaration before Beis Din. The Pasuk could have just said, they bring him to Beis Din and Skila is given. The very fact that the Torah has to add all these details, they grab a hold of him, and they bring him out to Beis Din, and they declare, and so on and so forth, implies all these things. So that in that case, we would say, that wouldn't necessarily show that in other cases where
so
you need
why,
the word.
Why do we need this Pasuk then?
So this Pasuk we need, because otherwise, because that's the thing. The Pasuk itself is teaching us that in this case, you do talk and need all those details. Doesn't necessarily show that in all other cases, but in
Krokodichtiv.
Maybe, maybe not. Yeah. Okay. So now we have another one, Toshma. We learn at the end of the Masechta, when we talk about in the last parak, when we learn about the dinim of the Irani Dachas, the Mishnah says, Ein lo rechoiv, ein nasis Irani Dachas, divrei Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel says, now the Pasuk says, by an Irani Dachas, the Pasuk says that you should take all of the property of the city, it's called Shlava Tikva, El Toch Rechoiva, you should gather it into the city's main square and burn it. So what happens if the city doesn't have a main square? Ein nasis Irani Dachas divrei Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel says in that case it can't become an Irani Dachas. But in Krokodil. Yes. Yeah. Rabbi Akiva Omer. On the other hand, Rabbi Akiva says Ein Morachoyv Oisin Morachoyv. On the other hand, Rabbi Akiva says, fine, if it doesn't have a square, make a square right then. Build a square in the city, and then you can use it to gather everything in. So I'm kind of like Pligi, so fine. The only machlokas between them, Ella is the Ella de Mar Sover Rechoiva de Meikra Beinin. Rabbi Shmuel holds Rechoiva means that it was already the Rechoiva, it was already the city square from beforehand. Or Mar Sover Rechoiva de Hashtanami, Kidme Ikra Drami, and Rabbi Akiva holds fine. As long as it now has a Rechoiva, when you're getting ready to burn the stuff, that's good enough. It's considered as if the equivalent as if it had it by the beginning.
You don't need a
Rechoiva, exactly. Abel de Kula Amma Beinin Kroka de Sib. Evidently, both Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva agree that Beinin Kroka de Sib. And if for whatever reason it were impossible for some reason or other to make a Rechoiva, even Rabbi Akiva would agree you can't make it an Irani Dachas. So Beinin Kroka de Sib. So again, what's Shmuel's Chiddush? The answer is Tanoihi. It's actually Machloikas Tanoim. Yes, you have some kind of
means
that if it means that if for whatever reason you can't fulfill the details that it says in the pasuk, then you can't do the mitzvah at all. Of course, that's what Shmuel was saying, that if the Edim are missing their hands, then you can't have Yadra Edim, and therefore, so we're saying that's when we see it from that Mishnah, exactly. The answer is Tanoihi. It's actually Machlokas Tanoim, whether we say Berin and Krokodichti. It's not, namely, we learn in a Mishnah. We know that a Metzora, the Torah describes for us in Parashat Metzora, that a Metzora, part of the process of a Metzora becoming Tahor, is the Kohen takes the blood of one of his Korbanos, the Asham, and applies it to his right ear and his right thumb and his right toe, and then he takes some of the oil that he brought along with his Korban and applies it in the same places. So what happens? We learn in the Mishnah, Ein lo boyan yad, boyan regel, oizin yamonis. What if the Metzora doesn't have a thumb or a big toe or a right ear? Ein lo tahor elamis. That's it. He can never become tahor. Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. Ein lo tahor elamis. He can never become tahor. Well,
that's one opinion.
So we seek brain and kruach dechtiv. On the other hand, Rabbi Eliezer oimer noisim amakayim of yoyse. On the other hand, Rabbi Eliezer holds that all you have to do is just you put the blood and the oil where the ear or the thumb or whatever was supposed to be, where it had been before. And Rabbi Shimon oimer noisim afsmoil of yoyse. And Rabbi Shimon says you put it on his left ear or thumb or whatever instead. So we see that the Tanakhama of this Mishnah holds brain and kruach dechtiv, whereas Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua say that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Shimon say it's not necessary. You can do it a slightly different way. By the same logic. Now, Tosfos points out the same kind of thing has to be. We can't be talking about the Masorah is missing his ear or thumb or toe before he became a Masorah, because that would be the equivalent of the Edim missing their hand before they ever became Edim. We have to be talking about the same kind of thing. They were amputated while between when he became a Masorah and now when he's coming to be Tahor.
If it was done from the beginning,
then according to Tosfos, it wouldn't be a problem. Everybody would agree, fine. Although the Rambam disagrees with that also.
The Rambam
passes like the Tanakhama of this Mishnah, and then goes further that even if he never had an ear, thumb, or toe, then that's it. Tosfos, by the way, also points out an interesting thing. This is one of those Mishnayos which in different places in Shas is quoted differently. Because here we have Rabbi Eliezer saying that all you have to do is put the blood and the oil on the place where the ear or the thumb or whatever used to be. Whereas in other places, in Nazir actually, Rabbi Eliezer is the one who says the other way around, that you have to, that if he doesn't have an ear, thumb, or toe, he can never become tar. So there's different versions of the Mishnayos that the Amoraim had, apparently. Okay. Mishnah says, Rabbi Eliezer says everybody who's given skila is hanged afterwards, and we'll see in the next mission what the procedure is. That's Rabbi Eliezer.
Opposite it.
Yeah. No, the only ones who are hanged are the ones are Maganda for a person who curses the Eveshter, while Ebedavidazara and a person who worships Avidazara. For reasons that we'll see in the Gemara where that both of them learn from the same pasuk, but they learn in a different way. When a man is hanged, they hang him with his face facing outward toward the people, or toward the passerby, in other words. And a woman is hanged, it facing in the other direction with her face toward the pole.
Because by the head?
So it should be no. We'll see in the next mission that they're actually hanged by the hands. We'll see. But the point is, we have her facing away from the people again. So there's much desire. The Chum say no. The Chum, a woman is not hanged in the first place. Only a man can be hanged like that. A woman not. Amar lahan Rabbi Eliezer. So Rabbi Eliezer says to the Chumim, what do you mean women can't be hanged? You find in the story that we had the other day that Shimon ben Shatak hanged these women, these witches over there in Ashkelon. So you see that women can be hanged as well. Amar lahi, so the Chum answered, and that's different. Shmoinim noshim tala. You see that he hanged 80 women all at the same time. Ve'en donin shnayim b'yemecha. And we know for a fact you're not allowed to judge two people. You're not allowed to convict two people and then judge and convict two people on one day because you have to give due time to process each one. So we see if he did all 80 of them over here, it must have been. It wasn't the regular way of doing things. It was, as Rashi says, it was shahutzrukalakak. It was a temporary measure because it was a temporary emergency measure because there was a problem. There was a widespread problem of witchcraft among
Jewish
women. They were Jewish. So therefore, as a temporary emergency measure, as we'll see in the Gemara, he did that as a one-time thing.
To show.
Not so much to show, but in order that people should be scared of doing this kind of thing anymore.
Sure.
Yeah. And also, Rashi says, practically speaking, you have to do them all on one day so their relatives don't somehow manage to save them or whatever. So therefore, but so that was an exception. You can't prove anything from that. The article on there, by the way, points out an interesting thing. Does it mean necessarily that they gave them skila first, or does it actually maybe mean that in this case they hanged them and killed them that way? The cause of death was hanging. He says an interesting thing. Maybe that was part of what Shimon and Shadok did as an emergency measure also. We said the other day the witches have no power when they're not touching the ground. That's why each of the boys came in and lifted them off. So therefore, if they were to give them skila, they'd be back in contact with the ground and they'd be able to have their powers back. So therefore, of necessity, he had to hang them. Yeah. When the Pasuk says Vahumas Visalbisa, the Pasuk says, also in last week's parasha, the person is killed and you hang him. Yoko Kolam Amosin Nitlin, so based on that, you would think everybody who's Chayav Mitzvah based in gets hanged. Talmud Lomar, no, therefore the Pasuk continues, Ki Kilalat Alekim Tolui, because the curse of Hashem is the one who's hanged. So what does that mean? It means, so Rashi explains, in other words, we hang him because he cursed Hashem. And therefore, the Rashi explains, the point is the Pasuk says that you shouldn't leave the body on the tree, you have to take it down right away. Why? Because, like this, when people see him hanging over there, people are going to ask, well, why is he hanging? Oh, then they're going to start talking about, oh, because he cursed Hashem, and they're going to start talking about the details of it, and it's a gnai for Hashem. It's an embarrassment that such a thing should have to be talked about anymore, that somebody did such a thing. We hang him, well, we'll see in the next Mishnah, we hang him for only a short time, then we take him down right away. We have to take him down before Shkia. But the point is, therefore, that the Pasuk is making a point. Why do you have to take him down as soon as possible? Ki kill after the Kim Toli. Because as long as he's hanging over there, the curse of the Eveshter is being remembered. What do you mean? So they do it immediately, and then they take him down before Shkia. We'll see in the next Mishnah. We'll see. So therefore, we learn from that. Ma makalel zeshev eskila. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says, we learn a binyan out from that. Just like a makalel is somebody who gets skila. And we're saying, based on Kikilas of Akim Toli, that he gets hanged, ask Kol Shabbat. The same thing applies. Anybody else who gets Skila gets hanged. Divir Rabbi Eliezer. That's how Rabbi Eliezer learns it. We learn, we make a binyan av.
Since
Makalo gets Skila, then therefore everybody else who gets Skila also gets hanged. No. Ma Makalo Zeshikoka Behikar. What is special about a Makalo is somebody who denied a fundamental thing of Yiddishkeit. So therefore, there's a fundamental thing of a belief in the Eveshtei. The same way, then the only other one that can be included is somebody else who did the same thing, namely an Ovid Avodazara. That's the only other thing where you're denying where you're denying Hashem. My community, what is the underlying machlokes between them? Rabbanon darshi kol yoprati, Rabbi Eliezer darshi buyumiyut. The Rabbanon are darshining this pasuk using the concept of klal uprat, and Rabbi Eliezer is darshining it using the concept of ribuy and miut. We've had this kind of thing before. Namely, Rabbanon darshi kol yoprati. The Rabbanon hold that you darshin by klal uprat. Namely, v'humos v'salisa is a klal. Ki kilolas prat. It means only the one who cursed the
fest.
This is only a klal uprat. Now, the usual rule is klal uprat or klal is. The usual rule is klal uprat. The rule is ein v'klal elamash uprat. The klal is limited only to the prat. We say, in other words, like effectively, we ignore the klal, and we use the prat only. However, e habu makar v'la dadi. Now, like this, the klal, which is v'humas v'salisa, and the prat, which is kikilas, are not right next to each other in the pasuk. There's a half pasuk between.
They have to be next to each other.
In order, one second. So we're going to see. Right. Because they're not right next to each other, therefore we modify the rule of klal uprat a little bit. So the pasuk can go like this: v'chi yib ishchet mishpat malbes v'humas v'salisa oisale. Then the next pasuk continues like solim nivlas ala eight. Don't let him stay overnight on the tree. And then why ki cover to prevent by mu ki kilas alekim tolui. So you have the half a pasuk away from the other. So therefore, ihav makar v'ladadi had the two parts, the v'humas v'salisa and the kikilas alekim tolui, been next to each other amunan. Then we would say ein b'chlal ala mashav prat. Then we would say the klal is limited only to the prat. So therefore, it means only the megadif gets hanging. Nobody else. Hani in midiachrin aloy. It means only this one, only the megadif, nobody else. Hashta the merachaki ma'adodi. However, now that they're a half a pasuk apart, the klal and the prat. So that accomplishes that we're able to widen the prat a little more. We're able to include also somebody who worships of a dezara, which is exactly the same as in the kallel as megadif, in the sense that they're both denying the Eivishter and they both get skilled. But nothing else. But no other nisko.
But the other day were close to each other.
Then it would mean only the megadif. Right. Rabbi Eliezer darshin ribuy and miut. Whereas Rabbi Eliezer darshins according to ribuy and miut. Now ribuy and miut is a different kind of thing. It means basically what it is like this. Klal uprat means that we look for things that belong in a certain category. So klal means everything, and prat limits it to one particular thing. And if we add another klal, it would mean everything that can be found to be in the same category as the prat.
Ribuy
and miut is a different kind of thing. Rashi explains over here. Ribuy basically means it should include everything. Miut means we're going to exclude one thing. We're going to exclude one thing that's the least similar to it, but we'll include everything.
Whereas klal uprat, the klal and the prat are similar in
well, what it is? No. So, what, in other words, what it is klal uprat or klal uprat or klal. What it is we want to use the prat as the basis of a class of things, and therefore only things that have a certain that have a lot of similarities to it belong in that class. Whereas ribuy umiut is going to be, we're going to take one thing out or one small subset of things out, the least similar to anything else, but anything else, even if it has any kind of similarity to the ribuy, we're going to include it. So therefore he says v'humos v'salisa is a ribuy ki kilas miut. Again, if the ribuy and miut were next to each other, then we would only include avodah the domilei b'chomili, which, like Yuchachamim say, is exactly like megadif and everything else. But now that the ribuy and miut are somewhat further apart, that accomplishes that we're able to include all the other niskolin because they do have much more of a similarity to that. They do have much more of a similarity to what's mentioned in the miut. Kikilatelakim tali. So fine, Rabbi Eliezer says, I'll be memaized all the other mitzvahs based in. They're not going to get hanging. But any other niskol will. The halacha is like a chum. We said in the Mishnah, Ish Tolim Chula, we said a man is hanged.
So the halacha is
like the Chacham, it's only a Megadif and an Ovid of Adazara get hanging. The Mishnah said, Ish Tolim Chula, we said a man is hanged facing people, and a woman is hanged facing the tree, according to Rabbi Yazir, and according to the Chacham, the woman doesn't get hanged at all. So my time is the Rabbanon. What's the Rabbanon's reason? Because Amakrov is Salisa Oisoi, because the Pasuk says you should hang him, and Oisoi is a miut, meaning Oisoi Veloi Oisa, him but not her. So women don't get hanging. V'Rabliyazer, what is Rabliyazer's answer to that? He says Oisoi Veloi Ksusoi. He says the word Oisoi comes, like we learned yesterday at Skila, that it means without his clothing. Now, the Tosfos points out, I mean, at Skila, he was already undressed. The point is, you would think maybe you have to cover him up afterwards before you hang him. No, Rabbi Eliezer says you learn from the word oisoi that you leave him undressed. You leave, well, with the same covering that he had during tefillah, the two pieces of cloth, whatever. But the point is, therefore, we learn that from oisoi. We don't learn from that from miyot that not women. V'rabbanan, what are the rabbanan answer to that? They say einochanami. That is true. We can't learn from the word oisoi. We have to have a different limud for the concept that only a man gets hanging and a woman doesn't. What is that limud? Elo amakro. No, it's rather because the pasuk says v'chiyah beishchet. It says if a man has commits an aveira that makes him liable to the death penalty, implying ish v'lo isha, only a man, not a woman. Still, the fact is, it may be generic, but the pasuk doesn't have to write the word ish at all. V'chiyah ba'odem it could have said, or v'chiyah chay ishmat mavet, whatever. It didn't have to say ish at all. So what does Rabbi Eliezer do with the word ish? Rish Lakish says, Rabbi Eliezer would say that the word ish comes to exclude a ben tzara remora. It is true that a ben tzara remora gets stila. However, Rabbi Eliezer would hold he is an exception. He does not get tzuya. He does not get hanging. Because the chiyah ish, and we're going to learn when we learn about ben tzara remora. We don't. That's the point. We don't. The point is, we're going to learn later on. We're going to learn when we get to all the dinim of ben tzara remora. We're going to say that we have to learn how do we know that he can't be beyond a certain age. Part of the limud is because it says v'chiya ben tzara remora, v'chiya ben tzara remora, implying that he is still a ben, that he himself is not an ish. So therefore, therefore when it says v'chiya ish, it means to exclude the ben tzara remora. However, the Gemara says, "Valtanya ben Tzara Remor Nisko ben Nitzla Divrei Rabbi Eliezer." No, there's a braisa that actually says it. Rabbi Eliezer himself clearly says a ben Tzara Remor does get hanged. So we're not memayit him from the word ish.
Is that the halacha?
The halacha is like a chacham anyway. Only Megadif and an Ovid of a Dezorah get hanging. So a ben Tzara Remor is not going to get hanging anyway, regardless whether we doubt an ish or not. But the point is, according to Rabbi Eliezer, we're back to what do we do with the word ish? Ella Omer of Nachmitz, the Rabbis Ben Tzara Remora. Just the opposite. The word ish comes to add the Ben Tzara Remora. You would think that the Ben Tzara Remora should not get hanging for reasons that we're going to say in a second. And therefore, the Pasuk needs to tell us explicitly by using the word ish that nevertheless he does. To reverse the exclusion. My timer. Now, why is that? The Omer Kravachiyab Ish Chait. The Pasuk says if a man commits a sin, so we have two miyotim over there. Ish v'loy ben. Number one, we have the word ish implying, but not somebody who's still considered a ben, namely the ben tzara remora. Number two, chet means mishal chetay nera, means it only applies to somebody who's actually getting executed because of an actual aveira that he did. Yotze ben tzara remora shal shum soifay nera. As opposed to the ben tzara remora, really, when you get down to it, I mean, Rashi brings from the Gemara later on in Amos Efta, the fact is, I mean, what, because the kid stole a little money and ate a kautima of meat and drank a half a bowl of wine, because of that, you're going to execute him? No, what it is fine, but even so. So Rashi brings on the pasuk, and then from the Gemara later, that the reason is because the Torah understands that a person like that, a juvenile delinquent like that, is eventually going to, if you don't head it off right now, what's going to happen is eventually he's going to run through all his father's money and then go out and become a highwayman or a robber and end up killing people. So therefore, the Torah says in that case, let's get rid of him while he's still innocent before he really becomes completely guilty.
Well, how can you kill someone just to prevent him from becoming a murderer or becoming?
The Torah understands that in this case he's really incorrigible. He's not going to be able to, and therefore the Torah. It doesn't matter. The person is Machal Shabbos, is not a Ritzayah either. You know,
he is Machal Shabbos.
No, the Ben Tzara Remora is not necessarily Machal Shabbos. But this that he's doing, the Torah, Yoda Torah, Lassoif Daito, the Torah realizes that the Eberster realizes that such a person is going to end up becoming, yeah.
It's hard to understand.
It never happened. I'll tell you, by the way, an interesting thing. You know, we were saying before that both of the parents have to have both hands and both feet and both eyes and whatever. I've seen a Musa de Kavort or a law about it. You also have an opinion over there, by the way. You also will see an opinion in the Gemara later on in the Masechta. There's an opinion they both have to have the same kind of voice and the same height and the same appearance or whatever.
So they say a mutter divorce
on that. If you have parents who are both exactly always on the same page and they're both exactly on the same page, and nevertheless he still becomes this juvenile delinquent that's been served a murder, then Taka, there's no hope for him and forget about it. As opposed to the normal situation is a kid goes off because, you know, one parent is lenient and the other one is strict, or one is whatever, one is they're not on the same page or whatever. So yeah. Okay.
That's true, actually.
Yeah, we have if both of them don't agree, that's true. It was a non-social property these days, isn't it? Yeah, that's true. Okay. So the point is, therefore, having miut achamiut. So therefore, we have a double miut. And as the usual rule goes, ein miut achamiut alulabis. When we have a double miut, it comes to add something. So fakir, not to take away the ben sir murder, but fakir, to add him back in. That according to Rabbi Eliezer, he gets tulia as well. So that's what he's doing with the word ish. Two miutim equal one ribui.
Yeah, but which?
The two miutim, ish and chet. Ish implying not a ben. Chet implying not a ben sir murder who's being killed because of what's going to happen in the future. So therefore, the miur tacham miur comes back out. He does, not only he gets tefillah, but he also gets tliya. He also gets tliya, even though you would think that not. That's all according to the Yazir. According to the Chachamim, we use the word ish to teach us not an isha. Then we said in the Mishnah, Amar lahen Rabbi Eliezer v'alei shivim v'shadach talam nashim. We said in the Mishnah that Rabbi Eliezer said to the Chachamim, what do you mean that women don't get hanged? What about shivim v'shadach and the witches? So the Chacham answered him, after all, you're not allowed to judge two people on the same day. So if we see that he judged and executed them all on the same day, must be that it was Hodashal. Must be it was a temporary emergency measure. So, Amar Rav Chisda, Loishonu Ela B'Shtei Misses. This that we're saying, you can't judge two people on the same day, is if we're talking two different Misses. But if they're both being tried on the basis of the same Miss, they both committed something that's Chayav Skila, for example, then you can. What do you mean? Over there, it was all one mitzvah, skiller or hanging, as the case may be. And still the Chachamim said that you're normally not allowed to do that. So it can't be that's what Rav Chisda said. No, rather, if it was said, what was said as follows. What Rav Chisda rather said was as follows. When do we say that you can't judge two people on the same day? It's if it's one mitzvah, but it's like two mitzvahs. Meaning, Rashi says, it can be one mitzvah. Let's say, for example, Shabbos and Avodah Zarah. So you have one person who's on trial for being Mechal Shabbos and another who's on trial for being Avodah Zarah. If they're convicted, they're both going to end up getting Skila. But because they're two different Averas, you still can't judge them both on one day.
So it was Averas.
So it's Averas, in other words. So Tosfos says, so what about the 80 women? The vote with the 80 women is there's a lot of different types of magic. There's Oiv, there's Yidoni, but they're all different Isurim. So it's like Shabbos and Avodah Zarah in that sense. But if it's one missa, it's the same missa and the same avera, you can judge two people on the same day.
You cannot.
You can, says Rav Chisda.
If
it's the same missa and the same avera, you have two people who are on trial for being Mechal Shabbos. Same missa and different avera. Yeah. If it's the same missa and different averas, you can't. Then you have to do them each on their own day.
So what do you judge on the same day?
What can you judge on the same day? If you have two people who are being brought to Beis Din, both for being Mechal Shabbos, with the same avera, Chilul Shabbos, and it's the same punishment, Skila, then you can, says Rav Chisda. With that, by the way, the Me'iri brings one explanation that maybe it means more than that. Maybe when do we say you can judge two people at the same time is if it's talking two people who are involved in the same act. Let's say, for example, Noyef and Neyefer. Let's say, for example, an adulterer or an adulteress, where it's the same actual act. Not necessarily, he says, according to this explanation, he says, not necessarily, if let's say you have two people who are Mechal Shabbos. The fact is, each one needs their own Edim and their own Asura, and so forth. Okay. Mostly from Adabar.
Carrying out a table on
Shabbos. Well, if they both carry out the table, if it's light enough that one of them could have carried it, right. Okay. Mostly from Adabar. Rav Adi Bar Abba says, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, Ein donin shnayim b'yamecha v'afilu b'noyef v'ne'efes. A Braisa says, you can't judge two people on the same day, even if it's a noyef and ne'efes, where it's the same Avera, and it's the same adultery, and it's the same...
man with a woman?
Lachura we're talking about, but even if it's talking about different ones, but we see the same Avera, same mitzvah.
Yeah.
The answer is, Tirgum Rav Chisda, the bas koyin b'orla. Rav Chisda explains that statement of Rav Ada can be talking about the special case of a bas koyin, and her and the one that she has relations with. Namely, we're going to learn in the next parak that with a bas, we're going to learn in the next parak there's actually three possible different misses that can happen for Neil. The normal one is chenek. The default, kind of the default one is chenek. If she's a naira ha'mayrosa, then it's skila. And then you have the unique case if she's a bas koyin, and we'll learn in the next parak the details when exactly it applies. If she's a bas koyin, then it's strefa. However, it's strefa only for her. For him, it's still chenek. So therefore, so what happens? Because that's what the pasuk says. So viyohi machalelos. The pasuk says she's disgracing her father. So therefore, she gets safer. Whereas her paramour gets chenek like any normal case. We'll see in the next perek. We'll get into in the next perek when we apply that exactly. We'll have a machlokes tanoim and a major piece of Gemara on the subject of when exactly is it skila versus safer versus chenek. Anyway, the point is in the cases where she gets safer. Regardless, her boil gets chenek like anybody else. Therefore, you have a situation over here. If she and the boil are both on trial, yes, it's the same aveda, but it's different misses. Sreifa versus chenek. That is what Rav Abba Bava is saying. You can't judge them both on the same day. Had it been a regular Bat Yisrael, which is chenek, and her boil is also chenek, then that would be fine. Or another way, oib bas koyin v'zomimei zomimela. Another scenario would be, let's say, again, you have a bas koyin, and then you have zoymimin of zoymimin. Namely, you have as follows. Edim come, Reuben and Shimon come to Beis Din and give edus that this bas koyin was mezameh. If everything checks out, she's going to get straight. What happens? Two other edim, Levi and Yehuda, come and say, imanu hayitzem. Well, then, usually we would say, bas tisim loy kasha zomah. However, because it says Vasisim Lakasha Zaman Lasis La'ochiv means to his brother, the Gemara explains elsewhere that the Gemara explains, I think, later on in Arma Sefta, we're going to learn later on in Arma Sefta and also in Machas that the word La'ochiv is meant as a miut, meaning in this unique case, because the Ochiv and Achoyta get two different misses, because we just said the Bas Koyin gets Sreifa and the Boyo gets Chenek. Then we give them the misa that they would have wanted for the man, not for the woman. So they're going to get chenek, not sreifa.
She's an arusa or an asur.
So Rashi explains over here she's an arusa or an asur. We're going to learn in the next parak, it's not so simple. But whatever it is, whatever the scenarios are that she gets sreifa, we're saying always her boil is going to get chenek. There's no exceptions to that. And because of asus and like hashazon and asus la'ochiv, therefore they are going to get chenek too. That's the zomimin. Now what happens? We have a zomimay zomimin. Now you have Yehuda. So far we have Reuben and Shimon, the original ones, who are now going to be executed on the basis of Levi and Yehuda's testimony. Now you have Yisachar and Zvulun walk into Beis Din and say to Levi and Yehuda, Imanu Hayisem, you guys who want to have Reuben and Shimon executed, you guys were with us elsewhere. Therefore, what we say is now Levi and Yehuda are the ones who are going to have to be executed, and Reuben and Shimon are going back to being innocent, and she is going to be executed as well. Again, there you have the case, though. She is going to get Sreifah. The Edim are going to get Chenek. We still say, because it's two different misses, it's going to need to be the trials are going to need to be... She's going to be Sreifah, because after all, the original Edim against her have been reinstated.
Right.
So on the other hand, Levi and Yehuda, the middle set of Edim, the ones who were trying to be... who were falsely trying to be Mazim, the first set of Edim, they're the ones who are going to be executed, but they're going to get Chenek. So therefore, you have against... Because Allah is La'achiv, exactly. So therefore, Chenek versus Sreifa, and again, it's two different misses, and therefore, you can't do it on the one day. There is that point also. That's true because that's true.
But it all comes from.
So he's pointing out, it's a very valid point. The fact is that the Edim Zomimin aren't being killed because of Niyuk, they're being killed because they gave false Edim, because Vati Samla Kasha Zomam. She is being killed because of Niyuk, because Sheyunaka Seishadish. Yeah. So it's actually two different Averas as well, but the main point is that it's two different misses. Tosfos, by the way, at the beginning of Makkah, points out an interesting question as far as this. If we're saying Vati Samla Kasha Zomam La'achiv V'loy La'achoy. What happens if, for example, Tosfos discusses over there, let's say, for example, their evidence is not against him. Let's say they don't know who he was. So we know that this Bas Koyin was Mezaneh. We're coming to give aid to that effect. We don't know who he was, so we can't. Do we still say, Vasis and Lakasha Zaman Lachos La'ochim V'loy La'achoy? Do we still give them Chenek? Or do we say in that case, maybe because they're not, there's nobody there being given chenek, there's only her being given shefa, maybe in that case they do get shefa. The Tosfos discusses that over there. It's an interesting point. Yeah. Okay. Tanya, we learn in a b'raisa. Actually, Hagoy Tabach references it over here. Hagoy Tabach Aleph references Zomim Evat Koin. Heinrich Zuleka Din Misa B'Boyol. This would have to be the case in the case where there's no Din Misa by the Boyol. For example, they don't know who he is.
She gets
then she gets safer, and then we're saying over here, even though in theory, then they get safer as well, because in that case, maybe we don't say Vasisamoy, but nevertheless, it's two different Averas, and therefore, even though it's the same Misa, and therefore you can't do it on the same day. Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Emor, Shamaiti, I heard from my Rebbeim, Shabastin Makin Ba'onshin Shalom in Atzorah, that Bastin is allowed to give Malkus, or to give other punishments, even Misa, Shalom in Atzorah, not according to the Torah, not even though the Torah doesn't say that this punishment should be in that case, V'loy Labra al Divrei Torah, now they can't do it as they're just going to make up a new halacha for themselves, that would be Baal Tosif, Ella, they can do it in order to make a fence around the Torah. Namely, when they see that there's a certain mitzvah that people are getting careless with, that people are just negligent, whatever, then they can make an example of somebody. So, for example, it happened once during the times of the Greeks that somebody rode on a horse on Shabbos. Now, riding a horse on Shabbos is only also the Rabbana. It's a Shavuos, yeah. But they brought in the basin and gave him skilla. Not because he really deserved skilla, because it's only a dindir abonon. But the times needed it, because people were negligent with this kind of thing. Rashi says the reason is because they saw the Yvonim are making Xeris on the Jewish people, so therefore people in general were thinking mitzvahs don't mean much anymore. So therefore the basin had to make an example. Then there was another example of a person who, a man who had relations with his wife under a fig tree, which is an open area. They brought him to Beis Din and gave him Malkus. Again, not because he really deserves it. At most, Pritzus. But because the times require. It doesn't say if it was in the times of the Yvonim or not, or whatever. So some of the Mephoshim say the verdict is that people may not have even realized that if anybody saw it happening, they wouldn't even know it was his wife. They would think it's some random Zoyna, and Lois Yekdesha, Yechayv Malkus for that. So therefore, there was reason to do that. Okay. What kind of Beis Din it is that has the authority to do that, by the way, is not so simple. The Ran says that it's only a Beis Din that has smicha, in which case no Beis Din nowadays can do it. On the other hand, there are a lot of Rishonim, including the Rosh, talks about it extensively in some of his Shuvahs, who say that as a matter of fact, yes, a Beis Din nowadays does have a duly constituted Beis Din. If they need to, they can still do the Migda Milsa. The Rosh himself describes, actually, he mentions, I think we've talked about this before, that there were Bate Dinim in Spain in his time that actually carried out Dinim Nefoshes. And at first he says, I can't understand how, the Sanhedrin is long gone. But then they explain to him that they're doing it under requirements from the government, from the Spanish government. And they said, in that case, then fine, it fits under what we're saying over here, that based in the government required them that you have to police your offenders over there. So yeah, whatever. So if you have somebody, if you have somebody who's chayiv misa according to Goyish law, and lahavdil, he would also be chayiv misa under Jewish law, then yes. Then Beis Din is empowered to carry it out. And that is indeed how it's passed in the Shulchan Aruch, that a Beis Din does have that kind of authority. Nowadays, I don't even necessarily if the government forces them. The point is, this kind of thing that we're saying, for example, to give a guy Malkus, for this kind of thing, that's that they're entitled to do. Practically speaking, unfortunately, Beis Din nowadays don't have, but the Dinim nowadays don't have that kind of enforcement power, but in principle, that would be the idea. Mishnah says, say, how did they hang the guy? Meshakin hakorah ba'aretz. They would stick a pole into the ground. V'ra'etzioi, and there's another piece of wood sticking out of it, so it looked like an L shape, like a langachos. They put one hand of the person is dead already. Remember, he had skilla. Right. So they put one hand. They put one hand on top of the other. V'tola oisei, and you hang him like that. So Rashi understands that it means they actually
both
hang
hands together.
Both hands together. So Rashi seems to understand they had the hands like hanging over the pole like this.
Fine.
The Yad Ramah says rather what it is they tied a rope around the hand and then they hung him from the rope that was attached to the hand. Anyway, Rabbi Yossi says no, they did it differently. Hakora muta ala koso. They didn't have the pole stuck into the ground. Rather, you just have the pole leaning against the wall for reasons that we'll see in the Gemara, why Rabbi Yossi insists on that. But tolo ose kader shatabochen osin, and you hang him like the way that butchers hang up an animal to skin it. In other words, you hang it from, you have the pole going like this. You have the pole, yeah, no, you have the, no, not upside down. But you have the pole going like this, and you have the person hanging over here.
I can't believe how lucky I'm going to see if somebody remembers what happened. Or
it may not have happened often enough, but it may be also. We're going to see in the Gemara, they're arguing based on a pasuk, so therefore it could be. When a case like that came to Beis Din, the Beis Din would argue about...
So you
tilt the pole against the wall, and then they have the pole tilted against the wall like this.
So this is the wall, this is the pole?
Yeah, and then you hang the guy like this from the middle of the pole, yeah.
All right. It's a
big enough, yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Mishnah continues. Matirin oseh miyad. You untie him right away afterwards. In other words, as we'll see in the Gemara, what they did is they would hang him right. They would hang him right before Shkia. They would execute him as close as possible to Shkia. They'd hang him right after that, and then immediately take him down. So he'd just be hanging there for like a minute or two. The imlon over all of Beloisa. If he stays there overnight, or some of the Mepharshim say, what? Over all of a loisa said, and no, over on a loisa said. Machlokas among the Rishonim, where the lon means that he just as soon as Shkia comes, they're already over, or are they only over if he's there all night? But whatever it is, they were supposed to take him down before Shkia. Shenema, the pasuk says, like Solomon Nivlos Elaid, don't allow his corpse to stay overnight on the tree. Ki cover Tikuranu, we have to bury him. Ki kill after Kim Tolu. Because the curse of the Eibishter is the one who's hanged. Kloima, what does that mean? Mipnei Maza Toli, as we said before. Because people are going to pass by and say, why is this guy hanging? Mipnei Shabirach HaShem, because he blessed, meaning he cursed the Eibishter. V'nimt HaShem Shemayim Eskal. So it comes out of Chil HaShem every time that people mention that Aveda that he did. Therefore, we want him down as soon as possible. The Chil HaShem is that every time. But people, every time people are going to be talking about it, it's going to be more and more talk about this guy cursed HaShem. And then we don't want that. We want something like that should be forgotten. That's it. We want such a thing should be forgotten. Amar Rav Meir, b'shar shadam mitzar. Rav Meir says when a person is having tzar like this, he's punished for his averus. Shchina ma loshen emeris. What loshen does the shchina use? Kaviyachol. Kalani meiroshi, kalani mizroi. Kalani, literally, we'll see in the Gemara what Kalani means. We'll see a couple of different possibilities. But basically, the basic idea of it is kaviyochol, like my head hurts and my arm hurts. But we'll see in the Gemara the exact lashon Kalani, that means like when a person is tired, he says, my head feels heavy, my arm feels heavy. And we'll see another meaning of it in the Gemara. So if the Eibishter is so concerned, feels so bad about when the blood of Rishoyim is spilled, how much more so when the blood of Tzadikim is spilled that the Eibishter is upset about it?
Where do you say that from?
So one second. So Rashi understands we're talking about when a person is punished for his Avedis. So Marshal says, in that case, what's Kavachomer to Tzadikim? Tzadikim aren't punished for their Avedis. So therefore, Marshal said, no, but then what's, but how do you make Kavachomer then? So Marshal brings instead an explanation to the Rambam and Pirush HaMishnayis that we're talking in general when a person is suffering. So therefore, if the Eibishter feels bad, even when a Rosha is suffering, how much more so when the Tzadikim are suffering?
Isn't that what Rashi
is saying? No, Rashi is saying specifically the fact that he had to get punished for his Avera, but the Eibishter feels bad that this person had to, I created this person, and Rashi spells it out in more detail in Chagiga, because this is brought also over there, that the Eibishter says, Kaviyachol, I feel bad, I had to create this person, and now he had to be, I created this person, and now he had to be killed because of his Avera. So in that case, then what's the Kavachomer to Tzadikim? I think they're more killed for their Averis. But so therefore, you have the other explanation that in general, they usually feel bad when a Yid is in trouble. Why Roshi and Zroi? They have a number of different explanations. One of them is that it refers to the famous thing that the Eibishter wears tefillin on his head and on his arm, just like we do, and the Eibishter's tefillin say, and like this, that suffers when a Yid is having to be executed like this. Okay. Simon Batoyev, we'll stop over here, and we'll continue with the rest of the Mishnah tomorrow. Thank you.